Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. I'm so excited to introduce my guest today, Russ Medge. He's a professional horticulturist with a Bachelor of Science in Horticulture from Brigham Young University in Idaho. He is also a husband and father of three with a fourth child on the way. Congratulations, Russ.
Thank you.
He owns and operates Simply Trees, which is a pruning business in Salt Lake City that specializes in fruit tree pruning and horticultural pruning of other specialty trees, vines, and shrubs like Japanese maples, grapes, roses, raspberries, etc. He loves working outdoors, and the only thing he likes more than pruning fruit trees is teaching others how to prune fruit trees. With his on-site one-on-one fruit tree pruning workshops where clients learn how to prune fruit trees with their very own trees as examples. When Russ is not pruning trees, he enjoys connecting with like-minded gardeners online via Twitter, Facebook, and his blog, which is amazing and can be found at simplytreesutah.blogspot.com. And the link will be in the show notes page. I guess yep. It's Simply Trees
UT for Utah.
Yeah. Blogspot.com. Just yep. In case people want to look. But I think you can probably just Google Simply Trees Utah and it comes right up.
Yep.
So welcome to the show, Russ.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Cool. I think this is going to be a great interview. Your website is just perfect. And especially I'm excited because we planted an orchard not last year, but I think the year before. And so pruning trees is something my husband's definitely interested in. We're really interested in learning more about. So,
yeah. And I think it's something that a lot of gardeners are afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just lack of education. And there's a lot of information out there, like especially online, but it just seems like there's different ways of doing it. And so people do get online and they try to figure out how to do it and then get a little bit overwhelmed with all the information that's there. So, yeah.
And I think that's the case with a lot of things online. So that's kind of what I'm kind of hoping with this podcast too, and the show notes, that people will be able to, you know, find information that they, you know, they hear about and it resonates with them. And so then they'll know where to go, and it'll eventually have a nice resources page. And already I'm working on a books page for books people have been recommending. And then I think will be beneficial because it's from people who are doing it and have real hands-on experience.
Yeah. Yep. So, I think that's great.
Thanks. All right. Well, so my first question, just to kind of get listeners, you know, an introduction to people, is just tell us a little bit about your very first gardening experience. You know, were you a little kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, how'd you get into gardening?
Yeah. Well, I don't really have a, you know, I don't remember my very first gardening experience because it's always been there. So like my mom always had a garden. Her mom always had a garden. It was just something that you did.
So you came from a gardening family.
Yeah. And it wasn't even so much that, you know, they spent time with me in the garden and you know, I learned to love it that way. It was just always there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Now, did you grow up in Idaho or Utah, or where did you grow up?
Well, I moved around a lot as a kid. My earliest memories of gardening and fruit trees and stuff was in Washington State.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Tri-Cities area. We had several large apple trees. Every single fence around our property was covered with grapevines.
Oh.
And then we had a plum tree, a sour cherry tree, and lots of other gardening space and stuff like that. So, yeah.
All right. Well, so then the next question I ask people is like, what does organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening mean to you?
Well, it's kind of to me, you know, organic is one of those words that I think confuses a lot of people.
Uh-huh. That's kind of why I asked this question.
Yeah. So like gardening is organic. I mean, you're putting the seed in the ground, you're growing these, you know, these plants. That whole process is organic. But what organic gardening means to me is instead of using lots of chemical fertilizers, chemical pesticides, mm-hmm. you're trying to make a more sustainable way of growing plants. And the way I look at it, like chemical pesticides and chemical fertilizers, they're kind of like drugs for your garden. So like once you use them and they work awesome, but your garden becomes dependent on those. And without them, you're not going to get very good results. So you have to, once you introduce those to your garden, you have to keep using them over and over and over again to get the same results every year. So organic gardening, it's more sustainable. You figure out ways to work with nature and just use more natural ways of getting better results, but it's sustainable. You don't have to rely on all these chemicals and fertilizers and stuff to grow produce. It's just not necessary.
Mm-hmm. And so, another thing that like I got interested in this from Rodale's organic gardening, and they have that farm trial system in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And one thing that they talk about a lot is chemicals and doing it the, like, you know, I don't know if I'd call it the ordinary way, but using chemicals and pesticides will produce more food in a year where you have, you know, just like ideal conditions. But if you don't have ideal conditions and you're, you know, dealing with like too much rain or not enough rain or any kind of like, you know, not warm enough weather, the organic is more likely to produce a better yield anyway and a bigger crop. So that's another thing that I think it's important for people to learn.
Yeah, it's more consistent. Your results are more consistent, mm-hmm. I think, using organic methods. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So then who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques? Was it your family? That's the way you grew up? Or did something change?
No, it's not the way I grew up. And as a matter of fact, when I was in school, you know, mm-hmm. part of getting a horticulture degree, pretty much you get a pretty good understanding of every single aspect of gardening and plants. You don't dive in real deep on any specific subjects, but you just get a good understanding of the whole, you know, the whole industry and you know, how plants grow and pest control and landscape design and floral design and just a little of everything. And when I left school, I kind of, you know, my philosophy was, yeah, organic's great, but it's just, you know, one way of doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, chemicals are just a tool that you can use to get better, you know, get better results when needed. And I was introduced with the term integrative pest management, okay. which is basically using a combination of several different methods to keep pests under control in your garden. And, you know, those, you know, all the, like the different tools are not just chemical, but, you know, cultural methods where, you know, good watering habits, pruning, just really how you take care of the garden is one tool. There's mechanical methods of pest control with traps and things like that. When I left school, my understanding was, well, there's all these different ways to keep pests under control, and chemicals are just one of the many tools to use, and you can integrate that with the other methods. And so that was kind of my philosophy when I left school, but it wasn't until I grew my own garden when I would, like, kind of just through trial and error, I realized that the organic methods were superior in more ways than one. Like, I got better results by using organic methods. Mm-hmm. And I'll just tell you one story.
Okay, that'd be great.
Yeah. My wife loves Shasta daisies. So
oh, me
I,
too. Cool.
Yeah, I grew some from seed 1 year, and I was really disappointed at how slowly they grew. It took several years before I got, like, a really good stand mm-hmm. of Shasta daisies where they just bloom like crazy. Mm-hmm. And one spring I go out there, you know, we were kind of just watching them. The buds were swelling and getting big, and we were watching them, and all of a sudden I went out there one day and they were just covered in aphids.
Oh.
And I showed my wife, and she just like, she can't stand like seeing in, you know, bug infestations. That just creeps her out. So, you know, she's like, spray them, you know? And so I don't want to spray them. Ideally, you know, I should probably just cut these flower buds off that are infested and just throw them away.
So what'd you do?
So I just left them. And what happened is in just a matter of days, like ladybugs came in and just cleaned them all off.
Oh, nice.
And the flowers, they were like stunted, or it just kind of slowed the process down. So like all the other Shasta daisies were about finished by the time these ones started to bloom.
But they lasted longer.
Yeah, they did. They bloomed and they looked beautiful that year. And the thing is, you know, with aphids and stuff, you can wash them off your plant, and you're not gonna get them all.
Right.
But aphids are really, they're like candy to a lot of other insects. Yeah, okay. and the ladybug larvae. I mean, they're ants. They eat the honeydew off the back of the aphids, but yeah, they're an important food source for a lot of the beneficial insects in the garden. So, if you just wash the majority of them off, then usually the beneficial insects will find what's left and clean them off for you without any chemical control. So to me, that's superior. You know, I didn't have to do the work. I didn't have to go buy, you know, expensive pesticides, mix it, spray it, you know. I just let nature do its thing.
And then you got all those cool ladybugs in your garden.
Yeah, and probably what that did is it attracted the ladybugs. They cleaned off the aphids on the Shasta daisy, and then they probably went hunting in the rest of the garden for more food, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, so it's, you know, it's just little things like that where just by trial and error and, you know, maybe even just lack of motivation sometimes, you're just like, oh, you know, I'll just let nature deal with this.
And you know, are Shasta daisies a biennial or they're definitely a perennial? They come back every year, but do they take a little while to come in? It seems like I've had that problem before too. My husband doesn't let me plant a lot of daisies because they're kind of a wildflower weed around here. And
yeah, yeah. Well, then once they get going, it's a lot easier to separate them. Just, you know, once you have a good stand of Shasta daisies, you can just go in and cut a section out, just dig it out with a shovel and move it to another part of your garden. Mm-hmm. I kind of gave up on growing perennials from seed because it just takes several years before I get a good, healthy stand of plants. So, you know, vegetables I like to grow from seed over buying starts. But there's some stuff that for me, I don't like to wait that long. So I like to buy perennials and I usually buy a smaller potted size of perennial, but I kind of gave up on growing them from seed because they just take a few years to really get established in the garden.
That's good advice for our listeners too. Buy like a smaller one because they're going to spread and grow.
Yeah.
And they do,
the hardest part is just to get them up.
Right.
And established. Mm-hmm. Once they're up and established, then they continue to take off. But I like to let somebody else get them up and established, and then I'll take it from there.
We're pretty lucky here, too. There's a lot of gardeners that'll share their perennials.
Yes.
Although my interview that got released today with Ron Hansen, he had a nursery in town and he was the master at sharing the perennials in his garden. He just closed his nursery this year. So someone else is going to have to take over that job.
Yeah. My brother actually, he lives in Spokane, Washington. And for several years, he in Spokane, Washington, grew a huge perennial garden in his backyard. Mm-hmm. And he just advertised on Craigslist where people could just come and dig their own perennials out of his backyard.
Oh, nice.
And he would just do, you know, this might be a business idea for somebody out there that has a lot of overgrown perennials that they'd like to share them, but don't know what to do with them. But he would just advertise on Craigslist and maybe 2 days a week, people could just come by. And I think he had a flat rate, like $5 per shovel full, you know, as much mm-hmm, as you could dig out with a shovel. It'd just be like,
yeah, that's
bucks.
The nice thing about them is they're pretty inexpensive too.
Yeah.
That way. And then they're prolific in your garden once they get established. And also they're kind of native to your area. They've already come from somebody who's been growing them there. So they're going to do better than something you import. So anywhere you can find local starts is always a great resource.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
So that's a good one to look on Craigslist.
Yeah.
All right. So do you want to talk about the benefits of tree pruning for organic gardening now and get into that a little bit? When you were talking, I had a bunch of questions, but now I've kind of forgotten them. So I'm sure I'll think of them more as you're talking.
Yeah, no problem. Just let me know when they come to mind. But with fruit trees, it's important to prune them every year. And the reason... One of the main benefits to pruning fruit trees is you're actually minimizing the need for, you know, chemical pest control. And I'll give you a few examples. When I take a look at a fruit tree that's never been pruned for years and years and years, there's often broken branches from last year's fruit load. It was just too heavy. Branches break. You know, I find branches that have like fire blight and other diseases in them. And then they're just so thick. There's just so many branches that if, you know, cause I prune in the winter and early spring before there's leaves, but I picture this tree with all these leaves on it in the summer, and it would just be a perfect harborage for pests.
Oh,
because there's just, it's a great hiding place. You know, the birds, you know, are going to not be able to eat as many insects in a, you know, overgrown tree or shrub than they would if it was kind of open. And then also there's a lot of funguses, you know, fungi that attack fruit trees. And one of the best ways to minimize like powdery mildew and other fungus in the garden is to make sure that the leaves on your plants stay dry. And because, I mean, let me just give you this example. Like if you get something really wet and put it in a really dark, warm spot,
right,
it's just going to get moldy and disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing applies with fruit trees. You know, in the middle of the summer, it's warm. If you keep that tree moist and dark and warm, it's just going to be perfect breeding ground for fungi and other pests.
So
pruning fruit trees, it opens up the center. It lets a lot of air in. It kind of makes sure that the tree remains dry. It opens it up so that, for one, you get more sunlight on the tree so that it can produce more fruit, but it also opens it up so that a lot of beneficial insects can come in and take care of other bugs and pests on the tree in a more organic way. Also, you're cutting out the dead and dying and broken and diseased branches every year, and that invigorates the tree and actually stimulates more new healthy growth for future years. So pruning is it's not just to make the tree look nice or just to increase the amount of fruit that you get that year. You're also helping the tree to stay free of pests.
Right. You're creating a much healthier tree. It's almost like, sounds like getting your hair cut or something like that to you know, get rid of the dead part at the ends that people, you know, would worry about, oh, if I cut it, it's not going to grow. But it's actually stimulating growth, like you said. And those are a lot of good points. I think a lot of people wouldn't think about that. If your branches are hanging too much together, if your leaves are hanging together, it's almost going to create like a breeding ground in there for funguses and mildews and things like that you wouldn't expect.
Exactly. And and like the broken branches and stuff like that, they sometimes they're half alive, you know, it's just, you get this branch that's just kind of broken and just hanging there. It's a perfect place for other pathogens to get into the tree as well. Whereas if you do like a nice clean cut, it's that the tree's able to heal much faster from a nice clean cut than it would from a broken branch.
Okay, that's good to know. So yeah. If a branch is broken, you want to clip it off in a nice clean spot. So do you have some tips you want to give people for like how the best way to clip or when? Like you were talking about, you do it in winter or spring?
Yeah, so usually I mean, you can prune fruit trees any time of the year, but you're going to get a little bit different results if you do.
Okay.
So usually the best time to prune the trees is late winter, early spring. You kind of want to do it before all the, you know, the fruit sets. But on my blog, I do have like an 8-step method of pruning trees. And that's really, it's just a way, like I tell all my clients, and especially when I do the on-site fruit tree pruning workshops, I tell them that I don't practice what I preach, because I kind of do all 8 steps simultaneously as I go. Mm-hmm. But I just broke it down.
You've been doing it
for a while. Yeah. Yeah, I have. And it just comes naturally after you get lots of practice.
They'll get that way too once they practice them. But it's always good to break things down and start slowly like that.
Yeah. It just gives you some place to start. And I kind of work on, you know, remove what obviously needs to be removed first, and then kind of work your way up. Because sometimes, I mean, you've heard the saying, you can't see the forest through the trees.
Mm-hmm.
When you're pruning, you just look at that tree and it's overwhelming. You can't really see the tree through all the broken branches and the water sprouts and the suckers and the crossing branches and all that stuff. It's hard to really see what the tree's supposed to look like through all of this mess. And so what I did, I just broke it down into these 8 steps. And as you cut away the suckers and then remove some of the lower branches if the canopy's too low, cut out the water sprouts and the dead and dying and diseased branches, and then, you know, you cut out the crossing branches, by that time you can start to see the tree, and then it's just a little bit more detail work after that. But yeah, I mean, if the listeners want to visit the blog, all that information's on there, and there's a lot of information on kind of the biology and the, I don't know, just the way that the tree reacts to pruning, because all that helps you understand why you're doing what you're doing. Because if you just follow steps, you still probably aren't going to get the results that you want. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to understand how a tree works from a biological standpoint, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because that and that also allows you to kind of break the rules sometimes, you know. This isn't engineering where you're following a mathematical equation. This is biology, and so these steps aren't like a rigid guide to, you know, step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4. Sometimes you kind of have to break the rules, and you can't really do that unless you understand the biology of a tree.
And also, it's probably going to come with practice and getting to know your own individual trees. And does, like, climate have anything to do with, like, where different people live? Or does that make
a little bit. I mean, you know, fruit trees are fruit trees for the most part. I mean, different climates will allow you to grow different types of trees. I don't do anything with, like, citrus trees because we just can't grow those here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some of the colder climates, you know, it's hard to get a apricot crop. You know, if you have late frost and stuff like that, you can grow an apricot tree, it'll survive, but most years the blossoms will probably freeze. So I guess the climate does change a little bit, you know, what you can grow. But as far as the principles for how to prune a tree, they pretty much are universal across most fruit trees.
Now, how about, like, if somebody, do you have, like, any general tips for somebody who's thinking about starting an orchard or just wants to get, like, their very first fruit tree, about a fruit tree that you would steer them more towards that's going to be more successful in the beginning? Or is it just kind of depend on their preference? Or
yeah, I think,
is there anything like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, my advice to people wanting to grow fruit trees is start now, because it you're not going to get fruit year one. Year two, you might not get a whole lot. It's an investment. It's something that's going to take some time to get these trees established before you get any fruit from them. So that's like my first advice. Then, you know, another thing I see a lot is these fruit cocktail trees, is what they call them, where they'll take one tree and they'll graft in other fruit tree varieties into that same tree.
Weird.
And yeah, it's kind of cool, and the idea is great that, you know, in your backyard, you may not want a massive apple tree with, you know, where you're getting bushels and bushels of apples. You might not be able to eat that much. So the idea is, you know, have one tree with multiple varieties so that you can kind of extend your season, get different varieties and just smaller amounts that you can use.
Oh, weird. It would be like all apple, like you wouldn't have apples and pears together on the same tree or something.
Well, usually, it depends. There are some apple and pear varieties that could be grafted together, but they don't pair, they're not real compatible. They're pretty closely related. But usually, if it's an apple, it's multiple apple varieties. If it's a pear, multiple pear varieties. Oh. And then there is a, like the stone fruit, you can actually grow a plum, an apricot, nectarine, peach. And
really?
You grow all that on one tree because they're close enough in relation to each other that the grafts can take on
one
tree.
Wow, I haven't heard of any of that. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to get people too excited. I actually, my advice is to not do that.
Okay.
So it's very interesting, and the idea is really, it's a good one, but they're really difficult to prune properly. And the reason is some, whatever tree the other varieties are grafted onto is going to be the most vigorous part of that tree. And it'll often shade the other varieties out, and you'll actually, some of the varieties might just die out because the mother tree is just so much more vigorous than these grafted branches that they just don't do well. The only way to make them work is you have to, every year you have to prune each variety back to the weakest variety. So if you have a plum tree and they've grafted on a peach and a nectarine, the plum tree is just going to go crazy. It's going to be really healthy. The peach and the nectarine are probably going to struggle a little bit. They're just going to grow a lot slower. So every year you got to cut this plum clear back to the weakest branch.
Yeah.
So that you can achieve some sort of balance so that the tree is growing at the rate of the slowest variety. And so it takes years and years and years to get a good structure on that tree where all the varieties are balanced equally on that tree, and you're going to constantly be fighting back that more dominant variety. So it's tricky. It's not impossible. If somebody has a tree like that, I would just recommend that you know just do a lot of reading and learn how to maintain it. But I would probably steer people away from it. And there are other ways where you can grow multiple fruit varieties in a small space.
So let's talk about some of them. Do you have any examples of those?
Yeah, most fruit trees can be grown in pots. The pot will actually prevent the tree from getting too big. The pot will only support so much tree. And so if you grow a potted fruit tree, you can keep it pretty small. You can keep it on your patio. You can move it around if it's not getting enough sun or whatever. So that's one way you can grow several varieties in pots on your patio. You can grow spalier fruit trees, which is where you prune the tree flat up against a wall or a fence. And you can get a lot of fruit off of an espalier fruit tree in a very small space.
Nice.
And then there's also, they have columnar varieties. There's an apple tree that's a columnar apple tree where it just grows straight up and takes very little space. But because it's just a real tight columnar shape, it doesn't need a lot of pruning. It gets enough sun, you know, all around the tree, and they're very prolific as well. And so you can grow several different apple varieties that are columnar and get a lot of different varieties in a small space.
Nice. How about places to get trees? Do you have any suggestions for people, like if they're looking for fruit trees, like where would be a good place to find a good healthy fruit tree?
Well, I, you know, buying local is always good. Mm-hmm. But even local nurseries are getting them from larger growers, usually out of state. So I don't have any specific grower that I recommend, but I do recommend buying fruit trees in bare root rather than buying them potted. And I can explain why if you'd like.
I was just thinking, actually, my guest on Friday was talking about a bare root almond tree that he grew, and I thought afterwards, I should have talked about what is a bare root versus something that's not a bare root, because like my husband and I actually met planting trees and on the Forest Service, and that's how I know what a bare root tree is, but I'll bet a lot of listeners probably maybe don't. I mean, maybe they do, but
yeah,
maybe just explain like what the difference between a bare root and a potted tree is really quick, and then go ahead and explain.
So so basically a bare root tree is a tree that's been grown in a field, and then while it's still dormant, they basically pull the tree out of the field, root and all, and then they wrap up the roots and wrap it in sawdust and package it up so that it stays moist, and then they can ship it pretty much anywhere.
And are they pretty tiny? I mean, the ones we planted were 2 feet tall at the most.
Yeah, it's hard to find a bare root tree that's really big, and you don't want to buy really large bare root trees because
they're just baby seedlings, right?
Yeah, you want to keep them small, because they'll just do better. And if you take like a small bare root tree and plant it next to a medium sized potted tree, mm-hmm. in a couple of years you wouldn't even be able to tell the difference. Mm-hmm. But part of the reason why I like using bare root trees is just because a lot of problems can happen with trees that have been in a pot, especially if it's been in a pot very long. The roots start to kind of spin around that pot, and when they're really small, it's not that big a deal. You can plant the tree and the tree's going to do fine for years. But as those roots that have kind of like grown in circles, as they get mm-hmm. bigger and bigger and bigger over time, they can actually start crossing each other and growing into each other and cutting each other off, and sometimes trees will fail several years down the road, and the reason they fail is because they were planted in a pot. Mm-hmm. And where bare root, you buy it, you spread the roots out in the hole, you bury it, the roots just are able to grow in every direction, and you just get a much healthier tree in the long run.
You know, back to that story about when we worked for the Forest Service, like that was one of the things. They had like inspectors that would go around and follow the crew on the big unit. You know, you're talking like, mm-hmm. Hundreds of acres, and you have these tree planters all spread out. And they're like, our crew would have an inspector that worked for our company, and then the Forest Service would have inspectors, and they would go around and they would dig up the trees every every once in a while, X amount of mm-hmm. trees in a plot, and they would check to make sure that there wasn't a thing called a J root, because then that tree wasn't going to be any good, and you had to make sure that your hole was deep enough and the roots were going straight down into the earth to make sure that the trees were growing good. So I can totally understand that.
Yeah, and one other problem that happens with trees that are planted in pots is sometimes, nurseries will get bare root trees and then they'll plant them in a pot. But the root, most of the tree's root systems is kind of on the surface. There are some roots that go down, but the majority of the roots are on the surface because that's where they're going to get the oxygen they need and the nutrients and the water. And so, if you put a bare root tree in a pot and spread the roots out just on the surface, that tree's just going to tip over. And so what nurseries do is they put the tree clear to the bottom of the pot, and then they fill it full of soil, and they bury the trunk several inches deep. And that bark tissue on the trunk isn't supposed to be buried. It doesn't do well buried. it's a little bit different than the bark tissue that's in the ground on the roots.
Oh.
And so it'll actually sometimes rot away the bark, the trunk, and can cause problems in the future too. So there's just a lot of reasons why the bare root fruit trees are better. They're a lot easier to plant too, and a lot easier to move around. Sometimes those potted trees get heavy, and yeah, it takes a couple of people to move it to the backyard and
yeah,
and then move it into place.
When we planted 14 trees, I think, when we put this orchard in, and we got like varying sizes, and some of the last two that we bought were just giant. They were just so heavy and so huge. Like the guy that loaded them on our truck used a giant forklift and everything to get them on there. They can be pretty heavy. So, yep, but those trees actually produced fruit the first year. Like that seed, like we got fruit out of them that fall. I mean, not a lot,
That's
great. We got some apples, which I was surprised. And they were as big around as like some trees we'd had in the ground for like 5 years.
Yeah,
already here, but Mike wanted kind of a jump start. And like I said, we planted a bunch of trees, so we would have different, you know, different production schedules or whatever.
And yeah, and you might find 5 to 10 years from now, you won't even be able to tell the difference between your trees as far as size.
You're right.
Sometimes the smaller trees end up catching up with the bigger ones, because sometimes the bigger ones just don't have as... You know, they've been in pots or they're ball and burlap where they've cut away a lot of the root system, and it just takes a few years for them to get established, whereas the young ones just start growing from day one. So
I'm amazed at how many apples we've gotten already off of the trees we planted just a couple of years ago. Like I didn't expect to see anywhere near as much fruit as we got. So
yeah, it's usually that first year people are disappointed. Second year, they get excited because there's a few. Mm-hmm. It's usually, you know, year three where people start like feeling like, yes, this was a good investment. And then after that, it just kind of grows exponentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at some point, you got to cut it back so that it remains manageable, because if you let it get too tall, then you're going to have a lift truck or something to get the fruit out of the top of the tree.
Yep, we already have that problem with one of our trees, that old one that I was telling you about that's been grown for a while.
Yep.
All right, well, let's see. How about questions about your favorite tool for pruning?
Well, there's a lot of tools that I use for pruning, but... Mm-hmm. Probably the one that I couldn't go without is the saw, my pruning saw.
Okay.
Which is a little bit different than just like any, you know, average saw. It kind of has a curved blade. The teeth are cut in such a way that it's really easy to cut through large branches. And the reason why I go with the saw is because I love my hand pruners. Mm-hmm. But if I didn't have my hand pruners, I could still prune a tree with just the saw. If I had to, and if I had to reverse it, if I just had the hand pruners, I just wouldn't be able to get through any big branches. I could do all the little stuff, but I'd be kind of stuck at some point because you just can't get through the larger branches with the hand pruners. And usually I just use those two tools because the big loppers, mm-hmm. the two-handed shears, I can't climb a tree. I can't carry those with me on a ladder. They're just too big. And so I have a little sheath that I can put my hand pruners in. I put my saw in my back pocket. I can climb a tree. I can get up on a ladder. I have everything I need just right there. So pretty much those two tools are what I use 99% of the time. Okay. And then I have a few others that I use in special situations. But
should we go off the script a little and talk about those other tools that you use that like people would want to invest in if they're going to grow some fruit trees that you would really recommend that they have?
Yeah. Another tool I use obviously is a ladder, but I try not to use the ladder very much because, believe it or not, climbing a tree is so much safer than standing on a ladder, especially when you're pruning trees. When you are on a ladder, you know, you start pruning the stuff that's close to you, but eventually you got to reach for something. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you start reaching, your center of gravity gets way out and the ladder will just, you know, just fall or just get pushed away and you'll fall to the ground. I get up in the tree, and I just walk on all the branches. Mm-hmm. And if I were to fall, I never have, but if I were to fall, at least I'd have some branches to catch me on the way down.
Cool.
So ladder is one. And then, you know, I use the loppers, but mostly the loppers I just use when the branches are on the ground to just kind of cut them up so that they're smaller.
Oh.
And then I have a pole pruner, which is an extendable pole. It goes about 15 feet. And then it has a rope on it with a bypass cutting blade at the end. And I can, you know, pull it. I can extend the pole and reach the tall branches and cut them back if I need to. But the reason I steer away from that is because if I can't reach a branch from a safe place in the tree or from a ladder, mm-hmm. then the tree's too tall. Because I want to keep that tree small enough that I can easily harvest the fruit from a ladder. And so when I prune a tree, if I can't reach it from a 6-foot ladder or from somewhere inside the tree, then I just need to cut it back further. And so I don't use the pole pruner real often. I only use the pole pruner for really old, mature trees that already have like a really big size that I can't really do a whole lot with.
Okay. So that's good advice. So you want to keep your tree a little bit smaller.
Yeah, you want to keep it manageable. You know, if you just let it go, eventually the fruit's going to be so high that you just can't maintain the tree, you can't harvest very well. It just adds to your work. It'd be better to have two small trees than one massive tree, in my opinion.
Okay.
So
I'm thinking about this pear tree my parents had when we were kids, and it went all the way like to the roof of the house. And I remember one year, oh my gosh, we got so many pears out of that tree. And I'm trying to think, like, how in the world did they ever get those down?
Yeah,
but it wasn't easy to climb trees, so maybe my dad climbed up there. I don't know.
Yeah, and if you prune the tree so that it has an open center, the branches are kind of growing out mm-hmm. more than they are up, and so it kind of creates this natural scaffolding in the center of the tree where you can reach a lot of the branches just from those main secondary branches that kind of grow out mm-hmm. from the main trunk.
Yeah, it was kind of an easy tree to climb. Maybe that's what he did.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's pretty much it. The only other tool I use is probably like, you know, chainsaw occasionally, like if there's a huge, massive branch. But even then, like my hand saw, you know, by the time I get the chainsaw fired up, I could probably get through the big branch with my handsaw.
Oh.
So I seldomly pull that out.
Now, do you go, but you go to other people's places and work on other people's places sometimes, right, too?
Yes, that's what, so yeah, that's what I do full time this time of year. I'm just pruning everybody's trees. I have a pretty large list of clientele here in Salt Lake.
So how about a question about eating or harvesting the fruit on time off of the trees? Got any tips for that? Like the best time to harvest it or pick your fruit?
You know, the thing with fruit trees is they do all come on at the same time. So, you know, when it's time to harvest, it's time to harvest. You can't just kind of, you know, slowly eat at it. Mm-hmm. Usually if you wait a little bit longer, the fruit is sweeter and stuff. But if you wait till the fruit is really ripe, a lot of times you're competing with birds and other animals that mm-hmm. that want to harvest the fruit for you. Uh-huh. So I recommend, you know, harvesting your fruit just a little bit on the green side and bring it in to finish ripening it. And even then, it's going to taste a million times better than the fruit that you grow or that you buy at the store, because they're harvesting it like as green as they possibly can. And then they store it in a low oxygen environment. And then right before they ship it, they pump it full of this gas that causes it to ripen.
They do?
Yeah. Oh, so... Weird. It's ethylene gas. They use that a lot to
yuck.
And fruit naturally produces that gas. So it's it is a natural process, but it's, they, you know, they.
Is that what they talk about? Like those weird grocery bag things that they sell, and they're like, you know, if you put it in this bag, it's not going to, you know, your bananas are going to last in the fridge longer, whatever, your bananas are going to last longer, and your food's going to last in the fridge longer because it somehow prevents that gas from.
Yeah, the cold temperatures will slow down the release of that gas naturally. And you've probably also heard of people like saying you can put green fruit in a bag with a overly ripe banana. Oh. And you can seal that off, and it will actually it'll speed up the process of the fruit ripening. Oh. Because that banana, overripe banana, is going to just put off tons of this gas, which will then cause the other fruit to ripen quicker.
That might be handy for like avocados, because a lot of times you buy avocados and they're not anywhere near ripe, and then
yeah,
by the time you put them in your window, I don't know, for me, then like I just looked yesterday and I have 3 avocados that were super hard and now they're almost mushy.
Yeah, the timing, you got to get the avocados just right, because they go from ripe to overripe real fast.
How about secrets for preserving food or some fruit?
I grew up eating bottled fruit with grilled cheese sandwiches for lunch like almost every day. Like that's what my mom, she'd make up some grilled cheese sandwiches and open some bottles of fruit, and we ate that all the time. So that's, I love bottled peaches, bottled pears, bottled cherries, plums, you know, all that stuff. I was spoiled as a kid. You know, applesauce, you can bottle apples and make apple pie filling. So I just love bottled fruit.
By bottled, you mean like canned, right?
Canned, yeah. Okay. It's not in a can, but it's in a bottle. But yeah, same thing. Yeah.
Like in a glass jar, like a.
In a glass jar with a canning
with a
lid.
Sealed lid.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
How about anything? How about a favorite internet resource?
I like to get on Twitter, and I like to attend some of the chat. They have like a plant chat, landscape chat, tree chat, and it just has the hashtag tree chat, hashtag plant chat. You know, you can get a lot of resources and kind of build a network of friends that are like-minded. Just by attending those chats. So that's something that's fun for me. I don't have a lot of time to do it this time of year because I'm in trees most of the day. But on the off season, I really enjoy getting onto Twitter and being part of part of a group.
And that's how I found you, right? I think was on Twitter.
Yeah,
right?
On Twitter. Yeah. Yeah.
I know. I love Twitter for gardening. There's tons of great stuff out there, and it's current information, which is nice.
Yeah, and just knowing people that are doing the same thing as you and kind of bouncing ideas off each other is hugely beneficial for gardeners, I think.
Mm-hmm. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine or somebody's blog or anything that you really like?
You know, my mom introduced me to a book that I really liked. This is more, it doesn't have a lot of information on fruit trees, but it does... on gardening, and I don't even know the author of it, but it's the Vegetable Gardener's Bible. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you probably heard that one, but
I'll
he just kind of, yeah, he kind of,
the link to it in the show notes.
Yeah. He kind of recommends, you know, using, you know, wide rows, you know, organic methods and just, yeah, really help the soil. You know, if you focus on the soil, then a lot of the other problems just kind of take care of themselves. So, mm-hmm.
So then I like to kind of ask a question for, since you have a business, like, do you have any advice for listeners? Like if they wanted to get started with their own fruit tree pruning business, like where they would start, would you send them to college to go to horticultural school, or would you tell them to do an apprenticeship, or would you suggest something else, or...
a fruit tree pruning business, I'd love to, you know, help them out with that. You know, they could just contact me directly.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And I would love to, you know, kind of mentor them and teach them, you know, what I know and what I learned from doing it. And so they could just, you know, visit my website or blog and get my contact information there. Okay. If you wanted to put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I will definitely hook it up in the show notes.
But as far as like starting a business, you know, it's the same thing with, you know, if you want to start an orchard, you just got to get started. And then you got to be patient. You can't expect to make a ton of money year one if you start a business. You just got to start somewhere, and it's probably going to be pretty small. I also, you know, recommend don't like mortgage the home to start a business. You know, you just keep it simple, keep it small. And if you're providing a good service or a good product, it'll grow organically, just like your garden does. Like how I threw that in.
I did.
Grows organically, yeah. But it really will. It'll grow organically, and you know, as long as you're patient and you have a good product or service and are in a good niche, and you're patient, and it'll grow. So yeah, I think just if you really have a desire to start a business, just get started, and you'll learn what you need to learn on the way as well.
Nice. So. Okay, so then my final question I ask is, if there was one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would that be? Like, is there a charity or an organization you're passionate about, or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to, like, the environment, either in your local area or a national or a global scale? Like, what big change would you like to see?
Well, I'm kind of on the side, like not very quickly, but I'm writing a book on how fruit tree pruning will ultimately save the world.
Nice.
and here's why. I mean, some of the main issues that we deal with in the world today are problems with you know, sustainable agriculture. Mm-hmm. It's just not real sustainable. Where if people grew an orchard in their backyard, you know, that you can grow your own food, it's more sustainable than growing it in a large orchard where they're using tons and tons of chemicals and equipment and stuff to maintain that. And then you have to ship it across the country. And it's just not as near as sustainable as just growing something in your backyard. Another issue is we've got this problem with all the bees dying off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if everybody had an orchard or at least a few fruit trees in their backyard, especially if they're using organic methods, the bee population would be much healthier than it is now.
Now, can I ask a question about growing a fruit tree? Like, something that would appeal to me about growing a fruit tree more than a garden maybe would be, there's probably less work over the long, I mean, you don't have to weed a tree. Is that mm-hmm. true, or am I wrong about that? I mean, maybe is there a lot more maintenance taking care of the trees? You have to water them consistently, but do they, you know, they don't require a lot of the, you know, intense, for somebody who's like working a full-time job, is that an option for something that they would think about? I haven't really thought about it till you said this, but.
Yeah, fruit trees are really low maintenance. And if you think about like the footprint in the garden, it's very small.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can grow stuff underneath a fruit tree, especially some of the leafy greens and stuff like that that don't require near as much sunlight. So if you take into account the amount of area that the fruit tree takes up in your yard, it's minimal. I mean, you're just mm-hmm. even a mature fruit tree, you know, when it gets a foot in diameter, which is going to take years and years, that's about all the area that it takes up. And then, you know, you get this nice canopy and,
yeah, they're great for shade. I sit under our pear tree all the time, all summer long. That's my favorite tree to read by.
Yeah.
Hold on a second, Ross.
Yeah, no problem.
Mike, the deer are in the garden. I don't know why your gate's open, but I just watched the deer walk in. They're about to eat your apple trees.
I got the orchard too. You could read about that. There's a few organic ways of deterring the deer. It doesn't work 100% sometimes, but it helps.
Okay, good.
That's hilarious.
That's funny, though. I know, because the gates never open, and they just walked in total. I don't know why the gates open.
And they like fruit trees. They do. Oh, they love to eat the the tips off of all the branches.
I mean, we have a huge fenced yard, and it's a big gate that he's opening, like that you can drive through. It's very strange that it's open and that I would be sitting here watching them walk in right now too.
That's hilarious. Oh, I love funny. It.
Sorry.
But yeah, so you know, back to talking about the, you know, the fruit trees. Uh-huh. Yeah, they're just, they are low maintenance. You do have to prune them in the spring. Mm-hmm. You usually have to thin the fruit after it sets. And then you just kind of have to monitor them for pests. But other than that, they pretty much take care of themselves.
But they're not like a consistent, like you got to go down there and pull the weeds every day and, you know, just do a ton of stuff, add mulch and, you know,
no.
I mean, compared to like growing corn, the apple trees to me seem way easier to take care of.
Yeah, very much so. Usually you can just kind of do a little bit of work at the beginning of the season and they just take care of themselves and they'll give you a lot of food.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
I have just been amazed at how many apples he's gotten out of the trees that we've planted. It's just blowing my mind away.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun, and I just think that they, you know, they could do a lot to improve the quality of life for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We always need
more trees.
Yep, that was the other point I was going to make too, is that, you know, planting trees, that's the energy comes from the sun, but a lot of the, you know, the branches and the fruit and the leaves, all that stuff is mostly carbon based, and it's drawn that from the air. And so, you know, fruit trees are bringing in a lot of CO2 and sunlight and water, and they're making lots of sugar out of it. So it's probably, if everybody had lots of fruit trees, it would definitely help.
And in the spring when they flower, they smell so good and they're really pretty to look at.
Yeah. Yeah, the benefits are just endless. I mean, we could go on and on about the benefits of growing fruit trees. They're a lot of fun. I like them.
Cool. Okay. And then just something to, you know, motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and, you know, plant their own tree, just like an inspirational tip or quote to leave everybody off with.
Yeah. How about more is better, less is more. Therefore, less is better. And
nice.
I'll explain why. You know, sometimes we, you know, we think more is better. So we, you know, we'll cut out this huge garden and we're going to plant 20 rows of radishes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just sometimes get way overboard. And then as, you know, this garden, the weeds start coming in, we just get so overwhelmed that we just decide, you know what, I don't like gardening.
Right.
But if you just keep it simple, you know, less is more, you know, you're going to enjoy that small row of radishes a lot more than you are, you know, 20 rows of radishes. You don't have to maintain 20 rows of radishes because you're not going to eat that much. So you just keep it simple. You know, less is more. Less is sometimes better. You just got to, you know, keep your garden and your orchard and everything else at a size that you can manage and enjoy.
Now, how many trees do you have in at your place? Do you have a big place or a little place?
We're in between places, but the place that we're moving away from has an apple tree in the garden, and then in the landscape I put a little peach tree there, and then we have all raspberries and stuff too that we started growing. But right now we're in the process of moving, so.
I was just thinking,
really,
how do you keep all those kids from climbing all those trees all the time?
Yeah.
Or is it okay for the kids to climb the trees?
You know what? I lived in trees. It actually gives me some anxiety when I see kids climbing trees, but I have to remind myself that I was once young and I spent a lot of time in trees and probably places in the tree that I shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that boys survive, actually. It really is.
That's funny. I don't know. I was
childhood.
A teacher for almost 10 years, and one of my favorite things to do was go to recess and watch the kids out there, which I, knock on wood, was always so glad nobody, I don't know what I would have done if any of the kids ever got hurt. And I was at several schools where kids broke their arms, and thank God I was never on the playground during any of those events. But I don't know. I think it's good for kids to climb trees and things. As long as it wouldn't hurt the tree, I would stay. can't be a better place for them.
Yeah, kids, I don't think will hurt the tree. Sometimes, you know.
I definitely think playing video games is way worse for them.
I agree with that. Far. Yeah. So. Yeah, before I would turn 12, I think I had stitches 6 or 7 times and broke my arm once and had staples, but never once was it from a tree or falling out of a tree.
Yeah.
It was always just being crazy, a crazy boy.
Yeah. My mom had a tree that I used to do backflips. Or I could just hang on these 2 branches in this one tree and do backflip after backflip after backflip over and over. And I still remember, I'd be good for kids to be in more trees.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Russ, for sharing your incredible knowledge. And I will definitely put, if you have a fruit tree and you want to know how to prune it, you definitely need to go to his blog or to learn anything about trees, because it's just full of information and there's great video, right? There's videos and pictures and
everything.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of video, and I'm trying to develop that a little bit more, get a little bit more video tutorials and stuff on there. But yeah, a lot of good pictures, a lot of good resources.
Write to you and say, this is my problem, and then you kind of like document, or I wasn't sure.
I do.
What I was...
Yeah, sometimes I'll have a conversation via like text message or something like that, and I'll, they'll send me pictures of their tree, and I'll kind of convert that into a blog post and submit it, because I feel like if one person has questions, probably somebody else has that same question. So I just kind of like to... like to make that public, just so that other people can learn from others' experiences in the garden.
Cool.
So yeah, and I would just invite people to, if you're browsing through there and you have a question that's not in the blog, or a question about a specific blog post, or even if you just have a question and want it answered, just write a comment on the blog, or you can get on Twitter and ask me questions. I'm available. I might not be able to get back to you immediately, but I definitely encourage people to ask questions, and I love to help people out. Like I said, more than pruning fruit trees, I like to teach people how to prune fruit trees.
Well, you're really good at it. So. You're very good at teaching people and sharing your knowledge, and you have a lot of knowledge. So
it's just fun. I feel like, teaching is kind of one of the things that I feel like, I don't know, that's something that I enjoy a lot.
Okay.
And so I enjoy it more than pruning fruit trees, and all the information is out there. So it's not like it's secret, or I have no reason to hold it in. So I might as well just share it.
Mm-hmm. And your way of sharing is a unique way. So keep it up.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Russ.
Jackie,
have a great day.
Yeah, it was fun talking with you, and look forward to staying in touch.
Cool. Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at awesomemontana.com. That's just AWESOMEMONTANA.com, like awesome Montana, all spelled out. And click on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener Podcast, and it will link right to the show notes and all the things we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you'd head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us get found by other listeners and share the knowledge. Thank you again for listening, and have a great day.